Lynn Thompson with Darren Jocklin. Darren, you're in Vancouver and I'm in Newmarket, Ontario.
Grateful to be here.
Yeah, welcome to Living on Purpose and the On Purpose podcast, and just to be here together. It's fantastic. We are going to talk about your book that you've just written, and I have a number of other things I'd like to talk to you about. First of all, before I just give you a little bit of an introduction, I want to mention that we met just over 10 years ago on Vancouver Island, 2011, and I think it was in person. You must have come and done a talk at somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Was it a Women in Business organization? I believe it was.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yes. And you sent me a nice handwritten note afterwards, which was very nice. Yeah, which, you know, really introduced me to your style. And maybe some of us were out getting a bite to eat afterwards and you were reaching out to the waiter or waitress. I mean, that's something that you think of doing, but you really put that on the map for me. And probably you've set that example for me for this 10 years. So thank you for that, because I reach out to a lot of people.
I'm grateful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've written a book called Until I Become. Obviously, a lot has happened in the time before you wrote that book, and we're going to talk about that. First of all, I just want to mention a few things about you, that for many, many years, over 24 years, you've traveled 4 continents, and you've personally trained and developed over 1 million people in over 50 countries. And you've overcome a lot of adversity and failures and challenges. And I've been watching some of your videos, and it's quite amazing to hear the path. You know, you've realized that a lot of these things have been the biggest blessings in your life and really helped you become the man that you wanted to be. So I congratulate you on that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I just made a few notes of things that people have said about you. You've been called an expansive thinker and a visionary, a purpose and core value champion who brings the very best out of everyone he encounters, an advisor who can direct and execute, someone who fosters collaboration and effective working relationships and inspires a shared vision, and a networker who loves to make connections. Those are nice things to be said about you. They also really set a high mark for you to keep finding, you know, yourself excelling from each day, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's great to be here. We've been waiting 10 years for this moment. So So let's start talking about your book, Until I Become. And in the videos I've watched of you over the last day or so, I've seen no mention of your book yet. So I'm really excited to be talking about it. So what the heck have you been talking about in this book? Can you give us a snapshot?
Yeah, well, you know, I'll share with you. Over the last, 25 years, I had over 300 different book publishers from all over the world, many different cities and countries approach me and want me to write a book. And I had no interest in ever writing a book. And then during the global pandemic of COVID-19 in 2020, Tete and I were doing some planning, you know, for end of life and executive planning and stuff like that. And I thought, you know, for over the years, I've been collecting all these journals. Every day I journal. It's a non-negotiable daily habit that I do. And there's so much valuable wisdom and information and content in these years of journals. And I thought, which nieces and nephews are going to get these if something should unexpectedly happen to me, right, in my passing? And then I got thinking, you know, why should I wait till upon my death to pay it forward and pass it on? Why don't I create a legacy now and make a ripple of impact and transform the human spirit and share with people, you know, practical tools, tips and techniques and life lessons and systems and strategies and processes that I learned from sitting on an airplane with people, to being in hotels, to conferences, conventions, to interviewing people over breakfast, lunches, and dinners. So much wisdom that I could put into a book that could compress decades into days or hours for somebody reading through it, whether it's chapter by chapter, page by page, word by word. And so the book is about Until I Become, you know, from grade 1 to grade 12. So I went to school in Swift Current, Saskatchewan, Canada, and I failed grade 1 of public school, and I was misdiagnosed with a learning disability and a reading disability. And I was put into special education classes in public school. So from grade 1 to grade 12, I was put into special education. I was also put on a medication drug called Ritalin for hyperactive activity. But I was this kid, like, there's nothing wrong with me. Why am I in this special education class? Why aren't I with the regular kids? There's nothing wrong with me. And so when I turned 7 years of age, I created my first little company in Swift Current called Rent-A-Kid. I would go out and cut grass, shovel snow in the wintertime, and deliver the Regina Leader Post newspaper 6 days a week in my neighborhood. And what I discovered at a very young age is, as human beings, all we are is a network of conversations. And everything that we want in our lives is going to come from strangers. Strangers, everything we want, everything we need, and everything we desire in our lives. And it's all about having conversations with people. And it's about making requests and making promises. And so I learned, just like children, when you go to a grocery store and the children start to negotiate with the parent because they want a chocolate bar or some candy, we are, as human beings, a network of conversations. And so in Until I Become, I share with people and I unpack my backstory with a lot of adversities and failures and challenges and setbacks. But what were the blessings in disguise? What were the life lessons that I learned through those mistakes, those adversities, those challenges that could accelerate me from my backstory to my comeback story to my success story to now a legacy story? Because statistically, I was supposed to not succeed. I barely passed public high school. I was always the last kid picked in any school sports team or any school activity. I was always the last kid that, okay, Darren, you go to this team. And so I share with people in Until I Become, because we're all waiting to become somebody, whether it's a mother, it's a father, it's a grandmother, it's a grandparent, it's a president or CEO of your own company, it's looking forward to the golden days of retirement. We're all looking to become that musician, that artist, that inventor, that entertainer inside of us that we want to become. And so I take people on a journey in an incredible, authentic, vulnerable way. Like I really put myself out there. I put all my cards on the table and I show people some of my darkest days of, you know, suicide attempts to depression, to climbing down a dark hole. And how did I turn things around? Financial problems, you know, like real straight, like to a point where they came and repossessed my car, to going years without paying my taxes on time and completely out of integrity and having no integrity in my life and having breakdown after breakdown after breakdown in my life. And why aren't things working for myself? And bang my head against the wall. And then meeting different mentors and different coaches and different people along my journey who showed me that, hey, Darren, without integrity, nothing works. There's no workability without integrity. Learning that our word creates our world. And so there's a lot of information that's in Until I Become. You could spend, love of my life, Tatiana, she has 3 academic degrees from the top universities in Canada. She spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in formal academic education. And she spent 35 years in academia in the educational industry until I retired to come work with me as my COO of my group of companies. And she's been part of my book writing team. And she's like, I've learned more practical information from you in this book in the last 6 months of doing this than I did going to university and getting all this information. I've had people who have MBAs from Harvard Business School who are smart people look at this in terms of book review and say, Darren, I learned more in this book than I did going to Harvard Business School, spending all this money and all this time. So I'm not discrediting Harvard or any of these organizations, but I wanted to share with people a book that I wish I had when I was younger that could be like a roadmap to show me how to avoid all these costly mistakes and failures and challenges and adversities. And really what I'm after, what my return on investment is for this book, is I want to click the stories. I want to be on an airplane. I want to meet you down the road, Lynn, sometime and, you know, in Toronto or Newmarket, Ontario. And somebody comes up to me, a complete stranger, and says, I read your book and here's how it changed my life. I read your book and I bought 50 copies and given to my kids' school so the kids in school could read the books. I had a friend of mine that, you know, got on the wrong side of the tracks and ended up in jail, wanted to turn his life around. And I put the book into the prison system. And now he's gone off to set up a business and he's got 10 full-time employees working in a construction company or whatever it is. That's what I'm after, is the stories of the experiences and the ripple of impact of transforming the human spirit.
Darren, one of the things I really admire and appreciate about you is that you're sort of like a babbling brook that's just out of control, right? You're tumbling down the mountainside and you just can't help yourself and you just want to touch as many people as possible. And I love that. And probably I'm a bit like that too, but you exemplify that even more with your enthusiasm.
Something I've discovered is today is a brand new day and we've not lived it yet.
Yeah.
And we get a chance to be the author. We get a chance to be the main character. We get a chance to write this day. And when I was in some of my deepest, darkest moments in my life, you know, I would wake up completely stressed, financially stressed or under pressure, things going on in my life. And what I discovered was that there's no guarantee we're going to go to bed tomorrow night. And I live by gratitude. I count my blessings every day of my life. There was times I thought that was all kumbaya, woo-woo kind of stuff. What do you mean gratitude? Count your blessings. But now I live it. And Jim Rohn, one of my mentors, said to me years ago, he said, Darren, if you will change, everything will change for you. If you will change, everything will change for you. Because I was trying to change everybody. I was trying to change my negative relatives. I was trying to change the politicians. I was trying to change my family members. I was trying to change people in my local community where I lived, but I had to change me.
Well, yeah. And then that's one of the things that you say is change your environment and you change your life, right? Which is great. Okay. So this is still around your book, but it's also just about you and what you're bringing to the world every day of these new days. What would you say to somebody who doesn't say what you just said, who wakes up and answers the question, how are you? And they say, oh, same old, same old. That is like incredible to me that anybody would think same day, every day. Like, what do you say to somebody who has that perception of their life?
Well, you know what? I can relate. I lived that for a period of my life and I was struggling with that. And I met somebody one time and I asked the same question. I said, I'm in this vicious cycle, you know, just going round and round and round. What do I do? And the gentleman, he's passed away now, says, do you feel gratitude? Do you feel grateful? I said, no. And he goes, what I want you to do is I want you to take out a little piece of paper and every day, just write down on this piece of paper, one thing that you're grateful for during the waking hours of your day. Just one thing, just come up with one thing. And I want you to take that little piece of paper and I want you to put it into a jar. Could be a cookie jar, could be a glass jar, plastic jar, doesn't matter. Just put it into a jar. And I want you over the next 365 days to collect 365 little notes. And then on January 1st of the new year, I want you to take that jar, dump it out, and I want you to read all 365 notes of all the little gratitude notes. And I've been doing that for years now, because when we look at our lives, when we're in a vicious cycle, or it's the same old, is as human beings, it's about progress. How we know when we're succeeding is when we're making progress. So what a great way to create a paper trail to measure it, of 365 little notes that gives you physical evidence to say, wow, these are all little miracles of things I'm grateful for in my life today.
And you know what? That's even better than a gratitude journal in a way, because it gives it more dimension and surprises you, because you're not just reading over a page. You're actually stuffing it into something to mine as a treasure later. That's a really good suggestion. Okay, well, that makes sense. So why would you say that people are, what are they missing that they're not accomplishing maybe everything that they thought they would when they were kids? Like, how does that diminish over time, do you think?
Well, you know, a good friend and mentor of mine, Dr. John DeMartini, somebody I highly recommend if people like to research or study human behavior, Dr. John DeMartini. He's a world authority on human behavior. And John talks about how in our lives we compare. So every human being has a hierarchy of values. We have a value system. And our life demonstrates it based on our environment. You can see someone, for example, if a woman is in a shopping mall and you say to her, you know, how are you today? And she's like, I'm great. I said, so what's most important, or what do you value most in your life? She goes, I value my children. So when she works at her job or career, if she has a paycheck, when that money comes in, she will allocate her financial spending according to the children's needs, children's entertainment, children's food, children's supplies. Whereas her husband might be a businessman and he walks into a shopping mall. He doesn't see anything related to the kids. He sees the next business opportunity, the next opportunity zone. And so John talked about how in our lives, we all have a hierarchy of values of human behavior, of values and beliefs. And what happens is we look sometimes at outside authorities or other people and we compare. So I'll give you an example. When I was in the 1990s, early 2000s, I would go to workshops and seminars and conferences, and I would see successful men and women that would be doing seminars or on panels or, you know, guest experts. And I would leave depressed. I would leave these events completely depressed, completely beating up on myself, not good enough, not smart enough, feeling more stupid, because I would elevate them and put them on a pedestal, and I'd minimize myself and put myself in the pit. So the pit to the pedestal. And I always put them on in a pedestal that they're more educated, they come from a better family, they're just lucky, all these things I would make up in my head. And what I realized that behind the scenes, and this is what I talk about in the book, is it comes down to really two big things in people's lives: daily habits and daily routines. You take anybody, it's whether in sports, it's in entertainment, it's in business, whatever it is, men and women, it's daily habits and daily routines. It's what do they do during the waking hours of their day? And so what I've discovered is just studying human behavior and getting people around me, which I call a life team now, and Dr. John DeMartini is one of those people, I've started to understand why we do what we do as human beings. And that's from a lot of training development over the years, you know, in thousands of hours it takes. It doesn't happen overnight. But I've learned also too, that every day, step out of your comfort zone into your learning zone. It could be talking to a stranger. It could be taking on a new hobby. It could be going down a different street or different road where you live and going down that different, but just every day, push yourself a little bit out of that comfort zone into that learning zone to create new opportunity zones for yourself.
Well, I'm doing that right now with you, Darren.
Yeah.
That's great. Thanks for mentioning all that, because that reminds me that one of the things that you've said is that that first hour of your day, like, what do you do in that first hour of the day, and how, if it isn't exactly what you want to be doing, how can you, you know, incrementally change it up? And what does that say about you? How does it set the tone for the day and remind you that this is a brand new day? You look at yourself in the mirror and you know that you're a day older.
Yeah.
You're closer to your last day than you are to your first day, right?
Well, because the quality of our life is determined by the quality of the questions that we ask ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example. I used to wake up in the morning years ago and I would be sleeping in my bed. I'd wake up to the alarm clock and my alarm clock would go off and I would say to myself, what time can I go to bed tonight? And I'm not even out of bed. My feet have not even hit the ground yet. And I'm asking myself, what time can I go to bed tonight? Would you hire me as an employee? Like, imagine me coming to your workplace and being in your environment, your culture, and being a team player. Like, I'm pre-programming my mindset to ask myself, what time can I go to bed tonight? And I'm not even out of bed. And I lived that way for a period of my life. And I just thought that was just normal. It was just common sense. And then I started to get around different people that, like, you don't ask those questions. Like, no, Darren, we ask different questions because the quality of your life is determined by the quality questions you ask yourself. Like, if we go to Google right now, we type in, why am I stupid, and hit search on Google, it will come up, why you're stupid. If you go to Google and type in, why am I a genius, and hit search on Google, it will tell you all the reasons why you're a genius.
Really good point. One of the things I heard you talk about is the difference between transactional and relational.
Relational, yes.
Yeah, which I really like that distinction. And linked to that is your question here about relationship equity. So that would be interesting to hear about that.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, I love the research you've been doing on me.
Oh, yeah. I got notes.
You've done your due diligence. I love it. So we live in such a transactional world. And what I mean by that is this is where I made a lot of mistakes in the early days. Okay. Mm-hmm. Raising money for startup companies, meeting people, cold calling, knocking on doors. In business, you know, as an entrepreneur starting off, and we see it a lot in social media today. And a lot of people watching or listening will be able to relate to this. Somebody sends you a Facebook or a LinkedIn request and you accept the friend request. And first thing, boom, they pop into your inbox. And now they're trying to pitch you or sell you on their product or service or business opportunity. And you're like, I don't even know you. And you're trying to sell me something. Or you're trying to get me to endorse something or endorse your LinkedIn page. And I've never met you before. I don't know anything about you. So that's transactional. And so a lot of people, they are transactional in society. They're transactional in their relationships with dating. They're transactional in business and selling and marketing. And what I've discovered is relationship equity. People, you have to know you, like you, and trust you. When they get to know you, like you, and trust you, you start to build relationship equity. I'll give you a quick example. Years ago, I was raising money for a startup company and I was flat broke financially. And I was selling furniture. I was selling stuff, whatever I can, to scrape up money to pay for my airline ticket. I was staying at a budget hotel, cheap hotel, actually a Holiday Inn hotel. And I flew into this city and I was meeting with an accredited investor. He's a high net worth investor. And I want him to write a check for our startup company. We need some seed money. So I had no money. I couldn't leave the hotel. I was there because there was a free continental breakfast the next day. I couldn't afford money for a taxi or an Uber. I was right by the airport. So I asked this investor if he would meet me at the hotel because I was going to sneak him in to the hotel for the free continental breakfast. So the investor arrives in the hotel lobby. I come down there. I'm wearing my high school graduation suit that I had for 10 years after high school because I couldn't afford a new suit. Just changed my shirt and my tie, same suit. Meet the guy in the hotel lobby. I bring him in and there's clearly visible signs all over inside the Holiday Inn little breakfast area. Registered hotel guests only. Staff are walking around. I automatically go into pitching and selling this investor. I'm like a timeshare salesman. I'm there to sell him, to get him to write a check because I need some money. I'm broke. The guy looks at me and you could just see he got to a boiling point where he had enough and he's ready to shut me down, ready to rip my head off. He looks at me and goes, Darren, can you just shut up? Can you just shut up? And people around me are looking. He goes, listen, you're flat broke right now. I'm thinking, how do you know I'm broke? You don't even know me. And he just called me out because he could tell by my, because you know why? Behavior never lies. And what he said to me, he said, Darren, let's deal with some out of integrities. First off, let's put them on the table right now. He goes, why are you bringing me into a registered hotel guest only zone? You don't do that as a man of character. Man of character does not do that. He said, would you stop pitching and selling me and start to educate me and inform me? He goes, successful men and women do not want to be pitched or sold. We want to be educated and we want to be informed. We're smart. We're educated. We've got teams of people around us. We've got access to resources. And he goes, you need to stop pitching and selling and stop making this a transactional meeting and start to build relationship equity with me. And I had to go through a breakdown that day. I got beat up pretty bad at that breakfast table with that guy. But he taught me that I had no integrity. He called me out that I had no integrity in my life. And I was never aware. It was a complete blind spot to me in my life because I was just living my life. It was a blind spot. And that day was a tough day for me. And I was so grateful because I actually was journaling. I actually journaled that day. I was crying in my hotel room and I was like, wow, I was really depressed and really beat up. But that man was a real blessing in disguise because he called me out on my out of integrities. And he says, man, you're much bigger than this. You got to man up. You got to skill up. You got to level up and you got to become somebody. I don't see you that as that human being. You're somebody who's in survival mode because you're in transactional mode, not relational mode. And you're coming from lack and scarcity versus abundance and prosperity. And it was a transformational day for me. And I'm grateful for that. And so I share some of the life lessons in the book about some of those encounters with different people where I got beat up, you know, from these people, some tough love to teach you some life lessons because I was just trying to live my life and trying to survive, trying to pay my bills. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize how I was repelling people rather than attracting people.
Mm-hmm. Vulnerable share there. That's a good one. And yeah, because you talk a lot about that. It's about integrity and reliability and your word and, you know, keeping agreements, being trustworthy. I could tell you stories, but this is about you for sure. I mean, that is where so much of the learning comes. And when somebody believes in you and sees enough in you, like that woman in Toastmasters, right?
Yes.
Sue Urquhart, who saw that in you. And even though you pulled the fire alarm to avoid doing the speech, you followed that belief of someone else to find the belief in yourself.
Yeah. Can I share one quick thing about building self-confidence? I used to have really low self-esteem and really, I was really insecure as a kid. I felt really invisible. I felt alone. I felt they don't matter. I was never good enough. And I met a gentleman one day. I've met lots of different men and women throughout my life, influential people. This guy said to me one time, he says, do you know the reason why you struggle with your self-confidence? And this is in a Toastmasters meeting. Mm. And I said, I have no idea. He goes, because you don't keep your personal promises to yourself. Your word has no value. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, and this is a great exercise for people that are watching or listening. Throughout the waking hours of your day, just notice what you give your word to. You're going to go run some errands. You're going to go grocery shopping. You're going to go to the gym and work out. You're going to go exercise. You're going to take your dog for a walk. You're going to go on a date night. All these different things that you say you're going to do, but then you procrastinate or life gets busy and you put them off to the side. And what happens is what I realized that I was a master at putting things off. I would give my word to things and I wouldn't follow through and complete them. And he said, if you just start to notice throughout the waking hours a day of what you give your word to, because our word creates our world. And for most people, their word doesn't mean anything. And we all know this. I'll give you an example. When we invite people to meet with us, there's some people, you like Lynn, you and I, for example, you and I arranged to do this interview. I knew that the moment that you arranged the interview, I don't have to send you a reminder. You would put in your calendar, you put reminders on there, alarms if you need to, and you would show up and be here. And if something happened, you would be in communication prior to the interview to let you know there's a breakdown in whatever's going on. But some people in the back of our mind, we invite them to something. We're like, oh my gosh, I better send them a text message. Better send them an email reminder. Better send them a calendar invite. Oh my gosh, I wonder if we're going to show up. I wonder if we're going to make it. Are they going to be here on time? And all this mind chatter goes on in our mind, whereas other people, like, we don't even question it, that when they give their word to something, they're going to be here. And the thing was, I was one of these people that was unreliable in my life. I was the one that, I wonder if Darren's going to show up. I wonder if Darren's going to be here on time. I wonder if Darren's going to follow through. I wonder if Darren's going to make it. Should we invite Darren to the birthday party? I was totally unreliable. And people doubted me. And they're like, I don't know about Darren. He's a flake. And what happened was I realized in my life that when I started to pay attention to what I give my word to, my life started to change. My self-confidence, my self-esteem started to increase. the doors that started to open, the invitations I started to receive, the circles I started to travel in, everything changed because of what I gave my word to, because I've restored my integrity with myself. I started to build my belief in myself and my confidence in myself. So if you beat up on yourself a lot, just start to notice, what do you give your word to, and what do you follow through on, and what don't you follow through on?
Such a good example and demonstration, Darren, because yeah, it's true. I've learned that. And I used to not be on time. And finally, I realized that part of the reason I wasn't on time was because I didn't want to go, really. But instead of being more honest about that, I was, yeah, not putting myself in a good light. But, oh, man, especially with new people, and also with people I've known a long time, but especially with new people, I am so conscious of introducing myself in the right way. And, you know, I say what I'm going to do, and then I do it. And even if it's like right under the wire, because I do have a last minute Lynn kind of nickname, I will show up and I will be available, like I said I would. It's really important. Now, you talk also about a relationship bank account in yes. line with that too, right? Like the investment that you're making.
You know, imagine you and I go into a bank today or a financial institution and we go open up an account. And what does the person do? They ask you, would you like to put in some money into your account, your checking or savings account? Right. They ask you if you'd like to make a financial deposit. So what happens is that we don't build relationship equity with people, which is that relationship bank account where people get to know you, like you, and trust you. It yeah. takes time for people to go through the discovery process or the due diligence process to get to know you. And a lot of times people meet, they're like, oh my gosh, let's get involved in this. They're like, wait a second, I've just met you. I've been investing time or energy into getting to know you and like you and trust you. And that's where it's transactional with most people. And then they wonder why they struggle in sales or in their startup business or their part-time or whole-time business or their side hustle, is because it's all transactional versus building relationship equity with people.
Yeah, and I'm building relationship with people wherever I go. And I think you're like that too. And again, oh, yeah. I thank you for your influence on me 10 years ago, because, you know, there's a Tim Hortons near where I'm living now. And there's a guy in there, like it makes his day when I show up. We share a little philosophy of life conversation. I go in when it's not too busy, so I'm not interrupting his work. Mm-hmm. I have these little heart cards that Aww. I've been sharing for 20 years. Wow. And like he calls it food for his heart. It doesn't matter if anything else happens. I mean, that is huge, right?
Yeah. The little things that make such a big difference in people's lives, because, you know, every yeah. human being is dealing with something in their lives.
Yeah. And we don't know. And actually, these heart cards are your little gratitude things that you put in the jar. Like these things are little seeds that open up. They just open up conversations that never would have happened. They never would have had a place. And they take people completely by surprise. Like they're not expecting somebody to personally see them in their role, you know?
Yeah.
I've always loved that over the years, is just stepping out of roles that we're in. Let's just meet wherever we are right now, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, what else? Oh, you were talking about like on a Zoom meeting, which is more now what it's happening, where somebody comes onto a Zoom meeting and they come on as a leader. And the difference between coming in like with your head down and wanting to be in the back row, which is hard to be on on a Zoom. Just describe what that is like when a leader comes onto a Zoom call and the effect on the other people.
Yeah. So we can all identify whether we're virtually on Zoom or video conferencing, or we're in a location where a leader, a man or woman walks into the room. People stop what they're doing and they turn to watch the leader. And one of the things to consider is, how do you show up? When we meet people, we're either attracting or repelling. We're either memorable or we're forgettable. So when you're networking on social media or you go to a Zoom video conferencing call, for example, like I'll give an example, a few hours earlier today, I was on a call with people all over the world on a Zoom call. There's people from all over the world, Europe, Asia, North America, multiple different countries and time zones. When I went to get on the Zoom, my Zoom video had to do some updates. I was 4 minutes late to the call and they had introduced me. So they went to somebody else before me. I texted the gentleman, let him know my computer did updates. So when I got onto the call and they introduced me to this group, a lot of them were strangers. I didn't know who they were from all over the world, professional business people. I said, before I start, I would like to restore my integrity. I said, I am out of integrity. I gave my word that I would be here at 6 a.m. Pacific Standard Time Zone, and that's not the what so. And I'd like to restore my integrity going forward. I had some updates on my computer, and I've put in a system now and a structure going forward that I'm going to have a few minutes earlier to get on the call. So if that happens, I've got a buffer of time. And I said, the reason why I'm doing this is I want to restore my integrity. But some of you who don't know me, in the back of your mind, you're polite, you're not going to say it, but you're thinking, is this guy reliable or is he unreliable? And that mind chatter goes on in our mindset. I had three people that I did not know on that call that sent me private messages through LinkedIn after the call saying, thank you so much for demonstrating being a man of your word, being a man of character, and being a man and demonstrating how to restore integrity. I need to do that in my life. Because never assume we're not being observed. Never assume we aren't being observed. We're always being watched and observed because behavior never lies. So it's so important to us as human beings is how do we show up? So when we show up as a leader on a Zoom call, are we showing up and we hiding? Because that's how we're doing life. We don't realize that this is life right now, right? Like I go hiking all the time. I live here in Vancouver and I love hiking when the weather's great. And I say hello to everybody on the hiking trail. Half the people don't ever even acknowledge me when I'm on the trail, but I do it. But I had a gentleman last week stop me. He goes, I've seen you three times in the last month. I said, yeah. And he looked different to me because he dresses different every time. And he's, I got to acknowledge you. I said, why? And he goes, you make my day because you say hello to me. You're always so cheerful and always so polite and always so courteous and say, you always say good morning, sir, to me. And I want to let you know I appreciate that. He says, my wife just passed away and I'm dealing with some things going on in my life and a new different direction in my life. We were together for many years of my life. And he goes, I come out to the forest to go to nature to deal with the grieving process. And he goes, there's times I felt like not leaving the forest and just killing myself out here because I lost the best friend of my wife and my soulmate. Yeah. And he goes, I got to thank you because you're a complete stranger to me, but you have no idea the difference you made in my life by saying just good morning, sir.
Wow.
Out here hiking. So you never know the ripple of impact that we have on transforming the human spirit.
Yeah, really good point for sure. Speaking of passing away and stuff, you mentioned earlier in the call that you and Tatiana had made your arrangements and stuff for the inevitable of what will happen to each of us, you know, and how we just figure that each day is our day, you know, we're not thinking of leaving. I just really want to commend you for that and for mentioning it because it's something that I just did last year. And I've noticed how, you know, a lot of people are not wanting to think about it and they're just thinking they'll do it later. And that's something that can put a lot of peace in our minds as well as just keeping it simpler for the people who have to deal with it.
Another thing to add to that as well is what we do every quarter, four times a year, every 90 days, Tatiana and I sit down and we go through all of our usernames and all of our passwords.
Yeah, me too.
Any website or app that we pay or it's free. And we update everything into a document that's digital plus we print it off. Yeah. And we've got a physical copy of it as well. And that way, just in case something was to ever unexpectedly happen to myself or Tatiana or both of us together, our executive directors, for most people, when something happens to them, it's chaos. It's stressful for the next 2 to 5 years on your family, whoever's looking after your estate, to try and put all the pieces together and deal with it. And most people are disorganized. Same thing. We also have an emergency preparedness plan, Tatiana and I. We review it every 5 years and we have 72-hour packs that we got from St. John Ambulance. You can go onto their website or contact the St. John Ambulance or there's lots of different sites on the internet. Yeah. We also have a 6-month food supply of MREs, meals ready to eat, just in case something should happen. Now, you'll say, well, why would you do that? Because in the back of my mind, I live in Vancouver here, as I said, there's natural disasters occur here, but just as a contingency plan, just in case something should happen, we're prepared. And that way, it's not always in the back of my mind, what if? I've got a plan just in case.
Oh, that's excellent. And I mean, one of the things in the password list, which I have too, is the LinkedIn. You and I reconnected recently because I was going through the contacts I wanted to take with me from LinkedIn when I was deleting my account, because there's easily 6 friends on there who have been dead for years. Yeah. And I have left directions, you know, as to how to delete that account after I died. But I thought, no, I want to leave LinkedIn alive while I'm alive. And I'm so glad that I reconnected with you. And I mean, well over 100 people who I'm just delighted that I didn't just walk away, that I actually took a week to let people know. Those people who's, you know, they've left these online memorials probably very unintentionally, and probably nobody is even thinking of contacting LinkedIn with a death certificate and removing them, you know? Yeah. So that was not going to be me. Doing something that scares you every day. Now, you had mentioned doing a video family project for a legacy for your family, and I wonder if you have done that.
Yes, I've not done a video. I've actually started to write letters to each individual family member with instructions upon my death that a letter would be distributed to each family member and just really acknowledging, appreciating, recognizing, honoring, celebrating their gift to me, their time, their energy, their talent, and things like that. So I've been working on that. And then just also different ways or roles they've played in my education, my development, you know, my direction of my life, where I'm going personally, professionally, mm-hmm. and just honoring, celebrating, because it's about relationships. It's about friendships. It's about being in connection and conversation with other people. And so I've been working on that. You know, some of my family members were a little nervous when I was writing the book, because they're like, well, what's he going to say, right? Because nobody in my family's ever written a book, right? Wow. It's just not something my family does. And I wanted to create something to really honor and celebrate people, but also to pay it forward and pass on, but also to my family, like touching, I have no children, but I want my nieces and my nephews to read the book, and it guides them and gives them direction, thinking, wow, you know, this person traveled all over the world, did all these things, and left some valuable nuggets of wisdom that he can pay it forward and pass it on. And that's what I'm hopeful for things is that, you know, it's a legacy for me, the book, to make a difference, to help people, because, you know, we're either coming from a problem, we're in a problem, or we're heading towards a problem in life. We're coming from a problem, we're in a problem, we're heading towards a problem. Sounds pretty accurate.
Well, it's like that thing, if it's good, you can count on it getting worse. If it's worse, you can count on it getting better.
Yeah.
The title, Until I Become, I really like it. It's almost like being between steps, you know, because you're always off kilter when you're walking, your next step is keeping you from losing your balance. And it sort of feels like that, Until I Become, there's sort of that sense of, well, okay, so Until I Become, so I'm not quite there yet. So tell us about the title, how you came up with that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Remember Oprah Winfrey, when Oprah had the Oprah show?
Yeah.
And it's on YouTube. People can go to watch it. Oprah talked about, after she retired from the Oprah Winfrey show, she talked about all the different famous guests that she had for all the years she had on her show, from presidents of countries to celebrities, to people from all walks of humanity, Nobel Peace Prize winners. And she said they would be on stage, cameras would be rolling, be interviewing a president like Barack Obama's example. And when the cameras would go off, the person would lean over to Oprah and say, was that all right? Did I do a good job? Was that what you wanted? Was that okay? Did I do it? Was it good enough? Was it all right? And she goes, every person, when the lights went off and the cameras went off, they'd reach over to Oprah Winfrey and they'd say, was that good enough? Did I do a good enough job? Is that what you're looking for?
Wow.
As human beings. And so what I realize is Until We Become is all my travels around the world, train over a million people, doing corporate training, all the things I do today. People always come to me and they go, wow, did I do a good job? Do I matter? Because we want to be liked, we want to be loved, we want to be accepted, and we want to be understood, right? We're all, as human beings, we want to know that we matter. We played a role in somebody's life, whether it's children or grandchildren or communities. And so Until I Become is a lot of people, and this is why they have bucket lists and live lists, is people like, man, did I really play full out? When I get into palliative care or hospice or the end of my life, did I really live my life to the fullest until I become? Did I get all that music outside of me that I wanted to play? Did I write all the poetry that I wanted to? Did I do all the traveling? Did I go do all the concerts and all the musicals and all that stuff? Did I really live my life and do all the things I really wanted to do? Did I say all the things I wanted to say to my children or my grandchildren?
Yeah. Oh my God. Just so many things to the art of life. I wanted to mention, you know, your mindset of being in lack and scarcity or feeling at ease so that you're not striving, right? There's something that I've noticed in how people express themselves. I mean, you can tell so much about how somebody talks and expresses themselves, the words that they use and the thoughts that they're expressing to create their world, as you were saying earlier. Mm-hmm. So when somebody says that they want something or they're looking for something or they need something or they're trying to achieve something, I just think that the word available is so much stronger. Like, you know, I'm available for my next place to live. That's made a huge difference in my life, using that word. And also, you know, having a list of things to do. I love to call it my get to do list.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, another thing is too, for people, is a great exercise, is two questions for people. Is, so our life, and this is something I've studied by traveling and going through a lot of adversities and failures and challenges. And it looks really easy now. People around me who are working, like, it's just so easy for you because I've practiced it so many times. But here's something to consider. For every question that we don't ask, the answer is always no. So the key thing is to start making requests. And when we make a request, people only respond with one, two, or three answers. Step number one is they'll accept the request. Step number two is they'll decline the request. Or step number three is they'll counteroffer the request. So they'll accept it, decline, or counteroffer. So you can go into a restaurant and make a request for a complimentary dessert. They'll accept, decline, or counteroffer. You can request for a complimentary upgrade in a hotel and they'll accept, decline, or counteroffer. So the key thing is I always ask people, what are you promising this week? So what's your promise? What's a goal or a target or dream that you have this week? What's your promise? So it could be in business, could be in your life, could be in relationships, whatever it is, personally or professionally. What are you promising? And then what you do is you go out there and start making requests of people, right? Because here's the two questions. Just take a look at, where am I not requesting in my life? That's question number one. Is I get people to look at their life through an exercise. Where am I not requesting? And a great awareness is, where is an area of your life that's not working for you or doesn't have workability? That's not feeling alive or empowered or inspired. What's not working? It could be in your relationships, could be in finance, could be in health, could be in job, career, business. Where is it? And then if you went to work in that and just started looking at, where am I not requesting in my life? And then write it down on paper. Where am I not requesting? They've been months that you've been on a date night with your spouse or your partner. It's like, great. Could you make a request to your neighbors or a family member, or a friend, that someone you trust, to look after your children for a night so you could go on a date night? Or go for a walk or go for a picnic. Okay. Yeah. So question number one is, where am I not requesting in my life? And just take a look, do an audit or do an assessment in your life of where you're not requesting. Second question is, who do I become when I don't make requests? You'd be like, what do you mean? So when you're not asking requests of other people, where people can accept, decline, or counter offer, who do you become? You contract, you play life really small. You play life really, really safe. And so the thing is, we're contracting versus expanding. We're coming from lack and scarcity versus abundance and prosperity. And we're not allowing other people to be in service and contribute to our lives. We're being stingy. We're not allowing other people to contribute, to make a difference in our lives, because it feels good when we're go-givers. And I've had people throughout my life say to me, Darren, I wish you would have asked me. I wish you, when I was 4 or 5 months behind on my rent, thinking about suicide, and I was thinking about ending my life because I was so far behind on paying my rent and paying my bills. And then all of a sudden people found out, like, why didn't you just ask me? I could have helped you out. I didn't want to feel stupid. I didn't want to feel embarrassed. I didn't want to bother you. You're too busy. I put you on a pedestal. I didn't look that good. So all these things that go on in our lives, and yet we don't realize it. And so in our lives, it's so important that we make requests and let other people choose whether they want to accept, decline, or counteroffer.
You know, the tricky thing about that is, in your position, and I know people in this position, that they would feel more indebted if they asked, right? So that's a tricky pass.
Yeah, and here's something to consider. Yeah. And I grew up in a family where you don't make requests. Not nothing wrong with my parents, but I grew up in a family where you don't make requests. But here's the thing, is we end up doing life by ourselves, but also too, with a lot of other people. People by nature want to help other people. They want to contribute. They want to help other people.
And yeah, and like you say, you're limiting them from that ability when you don't ask. I totally agree about that. And oh, and the Aladdin factor, right? Mark Victor Hansen. Yeah, I remember reading that years ago about asking. And that's a brilliant book. And I'm really glad that you make a point of that, because it's very important. I want to make sure that we cover everything that we might cover. Is there anything else that's jumping out for you that you want to be sure to mention?
You know, I would say that, especially right now with the global pandemic and COVID-19, is I recommend people take their phone and just go through your phone and call some people who are the most busiest people in your phone, in their lives, their careers, their families, and just call them because you care about them. And it's a well-being checking call. It's not about your business. It's not about looking to get somebody to help with you if you're in real estate or you're a financial planner. You're not looking for more business than a financial planner or real estate if you're network marketing. It's none of that.
Yeah.
All you're doing is calling somebody to check in to see what they're dealing with right now in their life. It's just a check-in well-being call, because this person matters to you. They play a role in their life to you. They're important to you, to your family, or to your children. It's connectivity. It's about being connected. As we're dealing with a global pandemic, some people are dealing with stuff, and they, like when I was doing corporate training seminars, I would go up to people that, you know, you get the extroverts in the group, everybody knows who they are, but it's the people in the room that are in the back that just got a bad performance evaluation, or the company's going through layoffs and they don't know if they're going to be one of the people getting laid off. And I would always focus, sometimes the quietest people in the group are the most knowledgeable, have the most information, they have valuable information to share, but sometimes they're dealing with things. And sometimes the introvert type personality style, because I'm an introvert extrovert, but what happens is these people suffer in silence and you never know what they're dealing with, because sometimes they don't want to air their laundry or they don't want to talk about things and they compartmentalize things. Mm-hmm. And I just invite people that are watching or listening to this to reach out to people that are in your contact list or your phone and just check in as a well-being check-in to see what people are dealing with. You know, I called somebody not too long ago. The phone rang and rang and rang. The person answered and they were thinking about taking pills that morning to end their life. And I disrupted their thinking process by making a phone call.
Yeah.
And that was a huge eye-opener for me, realizing, wow, I was just calling because I got this download from being out in nature. Sometimes I get these downloads of things to do. I call it the voice or the whisper, right? It could be God talking to you or the universe, whatever you want to believe. And I just started making phone calls. And that really impacted me and really shook me up when that person I called in San Francisco was thinking about committing suicide and ending their life. But a stranger, because I don't really know the person that well, but I thought I'd just call the person. So yeah. Trust your gut, trust your intuition. That if you're driving and your little voice or voice in your head says, you should call that person. You should touch base on that person. Check in on that person. Follow your gut or follow your intuition and make that phone call. Send that text. Send that email. Send that little message. Pop by and see that person.
Yeah, totally. And it may not be that drastic, but it can always make somebody's day, no matter what's going on.
Yeah.
It's going to improve somebody's day. Hey, would you like to pick a heart card?
Sure, absolutely. I'd love to.
From this side or this side?
The one right where your thumb is, right straight up in the middle.
Right straight up in the middle. Okay, how about this guy right here? What do we got?
Let love be your guiding force.
Well, how perfect is that?
Wow. Hey?
I think so. Yeah.
It all comes back to love. It all it is love.
Yeah.
I'll share one thing about love quickly. A number of years ago, I took a seminar, a planning seminar about planning your life, like kind of financial planning seminar. So I go to this seminar and on the final day, we walk in off a break. And the lights are dim, there's candles lit, and there's caskets, like from a funeral home, caskets in this workshop. I thought, what the heck is this? So I walk in, and the gentleman says, everyone gather around into a circle, we form a circle. And he says, we're going to come to the end of your life now. He said, so I want you to think about what your parting words are going to be. And this is a total surprise to everybody in the group. We had no idea this was going to be going on.
Wow.
He rented these caskets from a funeral home. And we had to sit in front of this casket and look at this casket. And then we had to get inside the casket.
Wow.
And they closed the caskets on us for about 30 minutes. And I'm laying in a casket from a funeral home, a coffin. And I'm laying there for about 30 minutes. And I'm going to tell you, man, it was quite an experience. And I broke into tears. I was crying. I came out of it. And all I felt was love. And I realized that in the end of our life, it all comes back to love. And then we sat in a circle. They had the lights dim. They played this really classical music in the background. And we debriefed our experience. It wasn't a dry eye in the room.
Wow.
And it was just an incredible experience about how everything, people from all different walks of life, all different cultures, all different backgrounds, how we all come together as one in that group, small little group of us in that workshop that day, and realized it all come back in the end. It's all about love.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, there was a workshop I did years ago where we wrote our own
eulogy
or obituary, actually.
Obituary, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We could do your own eulogy as well to be read by someone. I know there's so much that we can do to just really reach out even after we've died, you know, and it's just taking the time to think about that. That's a beautiful, wow, I've never heard of that. That's something. Yeah. I've created a memorial bench for myself ahead of time.
Wow.
Yeah, I love that. I put some inspiring words on there and a little space for the death plaque after I die.
Beautiful.
And yeah, I love that.
Wow.
Well, Darren, Jacqueline, this has been fantastic to have this time with you. And Darren, Jacqueline is your website.com.
Yeah. Thank you for the difference you're making too, Lynn, in people's lives. I really want to acknowledge you for making a difference.
Thank you.
taking your time and your energy and the research that you do. Thank you for being a contribution to humanity.
Well, Darren, it's my pleasure, and let's just keep making a difference.
Looking forward to it.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.